everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm the host of Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy heard each Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight we have a very special guest here on the program. For a little over 10 years now, Garrison Keillor has hosted a live weekly radio program entitled A Prairie Home Companion. For most, the highlight of the show is Keillor's monologue, in which he tells the news from Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. These monologues display degrees of warmth, wit, understanding, and good humor, which are rare and sorely needed. He's the closest thing we have today to a humorist in the tradition of Mark Twain, Will Rogers, Robert Benchley, and James Thurber, and is the best storyteller I've ever had the pleasure to hear. He's a good friend to radio in general, and public radio in particular. His new book, Lake Wobegon Days, has just been published by Viking Press and is simply delightful. Among countless other honors, he was voted the funniest person currently working by you, the Funny Stuff listeners. It's a real pleasure to meet you, Garrison.
Well, thanks, Bob. That's just almost too much. In fact, it is too much. Take some of that back.
Okay. You write in your book, left to our own devices, we Wobegonians go straight for the small potatoes. Small potatoes, as I understand it, does not include being published in the New Yorker and the Atlantic Monthly, having a book on the New York Times bestseller list, and hosting a wildly successful public radio show. How are you able to nurture such lofty ambitions in such an environment?
I go straight for the small potatoes every time. My life is a series of small potatoes. What occurs to me now, though, as you mentioned, small potatoes, is that the small potatoes are the best potatoes that there are, you know, what we call new potatoes back home, those little potatoes about an inch and a half in diameter. They're so sweet and they're so good, and they're only around for one short season of the year. How can I nurture what with such lofty ambitions?
Well, you've said that the growing up in Lake Wobegon does not really encourage one to really want to make something spectacular of oneself. And yet...
Oh, no, no. Now, listen, you're wrong here, so I just have to correct you. Children growing up in Lake Wobegon do have lofty ambitions for themselves, as all children do, and young people. And that's why so many of us have to leave home, because our fabulous idea of ourselves is not shared by our parents and older people. Our parents and older people keep telling us, how many times have we been told, between the ages of 12 and 18, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Well, who we thought we were when we were that age was a phenomenal human being, an incredible human being that the rest of the world could only guess at the depths that lay within us. So we had to go someplace else to realize those. And I did, and thousands of other people have in Lake Wobegon over the years left in order to realize themselves as finer people than they were allowed to be at home. But having gone away and having done whatever it is that a person gets to do, a person my age then makes peace with where you come from, with the family, and with your past, and that's what I've been trying to do now for a few years.
How has your book been received in Lake Wobegon by the people in it?
Hasn't been received. It's not a book-buying town. It's a town of people who stick to the classics. There are people there who read Moby Dick every
year.
Surely
they'll find out that there is a book on the bestseller list about them. Eventually.
They probably have heard about it already, but it doesn't mean that they'll rush right down and pay $17.95 for a book. I mean, that's an awful lot of money. The library will get one. I don't think the library has a copy yet, but I think that they will get one probably before Christmas, and some people will read that. But it hasn't really hit in Lake Wobegon. They take their time.
Even when they're the subject.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Especially when they're the subject.
You've been quoted as saying that you always wanted to be a writer. What did you realistically think you'd turn out to be? And did you have a fallback position, that is to say, something that you would do if the writing didn't work out? And would you have been surprised to find out that all this would indeed happen for you?
I intended to write for newspapers, and I pursued that right up until the time I worked for a newspaper, the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I dropped out of college to go to work for them. And it was a wonderful job. I loved it. I did everything. I wrote obituaries. I was the guy who called down to the hospital to see if the people who'd been hurt in the car crashes had died and should be added to the highway toll or could be left on the list of the living. I interviewed visiting celebrities, including a few visiting authors, each one more boring than the last. I did all this stuff. And I suppose that I could have earned my living as a newspaper reporter, but I'm as wonderful as the life was, I really did want to write something that was more my own and that was freer, and that turned out to be humor, to be comic fiction. And I published, it was just a few years after I worked for the newspaper that I published a story with the New Yorker, and so that kind of led me off down that path.
Would you have been surprised to find out that that you'd become this successful?
I would have felt the same as anyone else would have felt. I would be terrified. If we could see the future, if we could see everything, the good and the bad and the pain and all. And I'm not sure if I could have seen it then that I would have been willing to pay the price that a person has to pay. So I'm glad that I didn't know about it. As far as feeling successful, I feel successful at odd moments, at wonderful odd moments, but it's never a feeling that lasts very long, because I'm working on a lot of things. I have all of these interesting problems that I've always wanted to have. I've gone through periods of when I wasn't working much. Long ago, I wasn't doing much, writing wasn't going well, when work was fairly cut and dried, and I always hoped for problems to come along, and now I've got them. Wonderful writing problems and unfinished pieces, and another book that I'm working on, and this radio show that I do, which is fraught with fascinating problems. So I just have, there just are a few little moments when I feel successful.
Your monologues are designed to give the impression that you're just up there chatting off the cuff about the news from your hometown, but most of us know better. Tell me a little bit about the preparation that goes into the monologues.
Well, I prepare as much as I can, because I have gone and seen people who've gotten up in front of an audience without any preparation. And it's terrible. It usually ends up badly, but the attitude that would allow somebody to go out in front of people without preparation is hard for me to understand, to be so egocentric, to be such an egotist that you think people would be willing just to watch you stand up there and flounder around for a long time. So I prepare as much as I can. I believe that spontaneity comes from preparation, that only when you have some solid ground to stand on are you able to improvise. Improvisation is what I really want to be able to do. I don't ever want to memorize a script, and don't. When I do the news from Lake Wobegon on the radio. But I sit, I write as much as I can, I don't worry too much about the order, I just want to get as much material down on paper as I possibly can. I'm a writer, I've been a writer for so long that writing is my method of thinking. It's my method of organizing myself. I sit down to write in order to find out how I feel about things, you see. Mm-hmm. Writing is not exactly a craft for me. That is a work of the intelligence, a work of cleverness, of taking what you already have and putting it in order. Writing is much more a process of self-discovery. So that's what I go through in order to do the news from Lake Wobegon. I write as much as I possibly can without any attempt to write a script, really, or to get set, but just to give myself a head start. And then when I go out on stage, I want to be free to work from that or to make up things and go beyond it.
Do you plan more than 1 week in advance?
No, not really. I do have stories that that sit around in the back of my mind that I'm not ready to tell as yet. Some of them go back for years, and they're wonderful stories, but I just don't know that I'm going to be able to do them.
Can you foresee a time when the parameters of the News from Lake Wobegon format become too constrictive for your storytelling?
No reason why they should be constrictive at all. I'm the one who decides what they are. So if I find the News from Lake Wobegon to be coming too tight and without enough air, it's really the fault of my own imagination. It certainly isn't Lake Wobegon's problem, because they do very well without me, and they will beyond the time when I stop doing the news from there.
Occasionally you leave a story up in the air unresolved. How do the listeners handle that? Do they get frantic?
No, they
How
don't.
Many people wanted to know about those concert tickets, I suppose, is the question.
Everywhere I go, people ask if Mrs. Beeler destroyed Jimmy's tickets to the Mammoth concert. I don't feel that I left that story hanging exactly. I felt that the answer was implicit in Mrs. Beeler, in her character and what she had done, but I guess I did leave it hanging. But people seem to be able to go along for a long time without knowing the answer to that. It has been a year and a half since that story. I don't get many letters about it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of mail do you get?
I get letters from people who want to tell me about themselves. I get a lot of letters from people who want me to say hello to their friends or wish somebody a happy birthday on the air. And then people write, we get a lot of criticism from listeners of, you know, where they think we've gone too far. And the letters that begin, "I've enjoyed your show for many years, but after last Saturday, your voice shall never more enter into my ear.
But I wanted you to know about it."
That's right.
And regret it. More than most entertainers, you give your listeners the feeling that they really know you very well and that you're an old friend. How well do your listeners really know you, and what about you would surprise them the most?
I think that they know me pretty well. I also think that the people who listen to the show know that when you step out on stage, you put your best self forward in a way. I mean, you certainly spare your audience some of the violence that that all of us contain, the anger and sort of shapeless, formless unhappiness that that we carry around with us. We don't do those out on stage, not in my line of work. But
not for long.
Not for long. Though I suppose you find ways to use those things. And I perhaps that's what would surprise people about me the most, though I would hope not. I would hope not. I mean, I yell at people, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have. I don't do it every day. I don't do it as a rule. But I have. I've had fights with people who are very near and dear to me and whom I love dearly, which I'm glad there are no tape recordings of, because it wasn't a proud moment, you know?
Yeah.
And fights that, as I look back on them and think about them, seem utterly irrational, foolish, and I feel ashamed for them.
I have a tape of one of those right here.
Oh, great.
We'll broadcast it. Do you find it unsettling to meet listeners who feel as if they know you so well and yet they're complete strangers to you?
No, I don't. I feel very good about meeting them. And I have been meeting them in connection with the publication of this book by the hundreds. People want, for some reason, which I don't understand, but they do want to have their books autographed, and they are willing to stand in line for 2 and 3 hours to have somebody do that, in the case of this book, me. And I've enjoyed those in a strange way, partly masochistic, I suppose, to stand in a bookstore for 5 or 6 hours and sign books.
You've mastered the spelling of your name by now, I
see. That's right. Is a strange pleasure, but I enjoy meeting them and touching them and looking into their faces, seeing who they are.
If I went to Anoka, Minnesota, would I recognize it as Lake Wobegon?
No, absolutely not. If you went to Anoka, Minnesota, you would see a river town. It's not a lake town. It's a river town, started in the lumbering days of Minnesota, and it's become a shopping center for the farming community around there, and now it has become a suburb of Minneapolis.
And would I find any of the people that you've talked about there?
No, but as you talked to people, and you couldn't find this in an afternoon or a day or maybe even a week, but if you stayed there and looked around and talked to people, people you would meet in Anoka would remind you of some people you might know from Lake Wobegon.
But no specific people?
No, I don't think so.
What does your family think of what you do?
My family is very reserved and very polite, and they don't comment extensively on what I do. They do come to the show from time to time. My parents do, even though they are not show-going people. And I believe that they enjoy a good deal of it, and the rest they reserve comment on.
Given your depictions of and understanding of the effects of truly repressive parenting, has this affected your role as a father?
Well, repressive, I don't use the term repressive for the way in which I was brought up, because the term repressive is of a psychology that my people don't accept. They don't accept the idea that that man is basically good, and therefore the more that we express ourselves and allow ourselves to come out, the better off we are. Why people hold the opposite point of view, so that what you call repression, we believe to be something else. We believe to be discipline that keeps something in check.
You were chosen by the Funny Stuff audience as the funniest person working today. There were two categories. There's the funniest stuff still working and still working in comedy.
Your audience, Bob, is made up of shut-ins, I guess, who don't get out often.
Most radio audiences are people in cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the other category was the funniest person who ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that a question this momentous requires a great deal of thought, mm-hmm. just off the cuff, who would you have voted for?
As the funniest...
Funniest person that ever lived and the funniest person that's still working.
Uh-huh. Well, I think probably Christ might have been the funniest person who ever lived. I think God has a tremendous sense of humor. But you probably are talking about human folks. Let me reserve answer on that one. The funniest person.
Well, someone voted for Jane Austen, so I suppose it doesn't necessarily have to be a comedian.
No. The funniest person working today.
What would the funniest thing that Christ ever did be, do you think?
I think some of the miracles were humorous. With the pigs, the pig routine where he put the evil spirits into the pigs and the pigs took off for the cliff. Let me think. Funniest person working today. Now, you see, I lead such a sheltered life. I don't get around and hear people very much. It would be a writer. I guess it would be Roy Blunt. I think he's the funniest person working today. For me, funniest person of all time. I'll bet it's somebody who we don't even know. Somebody who lived in North Dakota would be the funniest person. And that person just went into town once a week or once every other week and sat around and had a couple beers with people at the tavern and achieved such a perfection of humor that nobody realized how funny it was.
Your humor has very wide appeal. I, for instance, basically a New York Jewish type, find it very funny, even though I wouldn't know Lutefisk if I saw it, although from what you say, I probably wouldn't forget it once I did. However, in the three public appearances of yours that I've attended, although the crowd consisted of a remarkable variety of ages and socioeconomic levels of people, there was not one black face in evidence. Why do you think this is?
Because I'm a white guy, and I'm talking about a town where there are no black people out there in rural Minnesota.
There are no Jewish people there either.
Right. There are no Jewish people out there. What more can I say? It's not, pretend to talk about people whom I have no direct experience with. Jews have taken me to task, though, for talking about the church where I grew up in. Some people have asked me why I wouldn't have a Jewish family in Lake Wobegon. My answer is because there isn't any. There wasn't in the town where I grew up either. You know. I was glad to go away to the University of Minnesota and to move, though it was only 20 miles down the road, just move into another world, which included all of those people in vast numbers. And I was glad to be there. But I can't really claim knowledge beyond what little I have.
You're still a relatively young man considering your accomplishments to this point. Do you have any unfulfilled ambitions?
I want to live in a country where they don't speak English. And I want to do that for a while and learn another language. I have lived in Minnesota all my life. And so, of course, I've lived in America all my life. I haven't really gone far beyond this country. And I think America is so isolated from other people, and it's bad for us as individuals. I have an urge to get out of the Midwest and live in some strange place and have to learn a strange language.
Like New York, for instance.
No, farther than that. And then I think if I went and did that and lived where they didn't speak English, I'd probably start writing a wonderful book about Minnesota and write the book that it really is worthy of.
How are guests chosen for your program?
Just sort of based on a whim and a hunch of who we'll have a good time with on stage. That really is important.
Are there any guests you've been trying to get for years that you just haven't been able to?
Yes, but then it turned out that they had died a long time ago.
Fats Waller couldn't make it.
That's right. Yeah, would have loved to have had him on the show.
Well, he'd be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really good humorous books are a rare and wonderful breed. Apart from your work and the work of, say, Roy Blunt and Calvin Trillin, they're pretty few and far between. There really isn't much out there along the lines of Benchley and Thurber. Can you recommend any personal favorites?
Benchley and Thurber are still out there.
Oh, absolutely.
They still read fairly well. E.B. White is my favorite. His book One Man's Meat and his collected essays and his collected letters, I think, are wonderful reading and very, very funny. I keep dipping back into E.B. White every few months or so.
Well, I guess that wraps it up. Really appreciate you taking time. I know you're only in town briefly.
Sure.
And really appreciate the time to get to know you and introduce you to the listeners.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
And that's the interview with Garrison Keillor, recorded about a month ago in his hotel room, which explains some of the noise. It's sometimes there, it sounds like we're in a loading dock or something, but no, it was in his hotel room in downtown L.A., as I say, about a month ago. So his book is Lake Wobegon Days. It's published by Viking Press, and I recommend it. It's a fascinating book. Let's see, next week's program is Emo Phillips. You may have heard Emo Phillips on various radio commercials for an ice cream bar called the Dove Bar, which have been fairly controversial. I know KABC has gotten into some trouble over them. But Emo Phillips is fascinating. He's the latest proponent in what I call geek comedy, sort of along the lines of Howie Mandel and Pee Wee Herman and such. Except I think that his material probably differentiates him. I think he's actually rather good. So he's got an album out, and we'll be listening to excerpts from it next week. So that's about it. You know the address? Bob Claster, KCRW, Funny Stuff, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. So until next week, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.